One, two.
Hello, Mr. Hunter.
How are you?
I'm good. My name is Marty. I'm in Auckland, New
Marty.
Zealand this morning. How are you?
Yeah.
Thank you for taking time to talk to me. I much
You're welcome.
appreciate it. And are you in Connecticut somewhere?
Yeah. Boy, you got some records. You got some records.
Oh, good. You can see me. I was wondering if you could or not. Yeah, I got a few records. Quite a few of yours, by the way. I got the new one. There it
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah.
is. So, yeah. Do you have a big record collection or is it modest?
No, I've got a few,
Yeah.
Watson nicked a lot of mine. Mick
Oh,
Watson, yeah,
Brad.
expert record nicker.
Who would have guessed? He seemed like such a nice
I
guy.
know, that's what I thought.
Oh, well. Yeah. Old records, but there you go. I wanted obviously want to talk to you about the new album because you've just put it just come out a couple of days ago, and I got the Record Store Day version with the extra tracks on it, so it's all very good. But I
Right.
noticed that you've been describing it as being kind of denser, the part two is being denser than part one, and I was wondering, do you mean that musically, thematically, or can if you can elaborate on that the way you look at the record?
It seemed that part one was a little lighter, and it seems that part two is a little denser, lyrically, a little more. I was trying to avoid the politics and the situation we find ourselves in,
Yes.
but it sort of creeps up on you.
Yeah, it's hard to ignore.
Yeah, so there's a bit more like that, but I try to keep it under control.
Right.
As
Yeah, I mean, you've lived in the States for like 45 years, so you probably got a pretty good understanding of how things are working over there as much as anyone does. But do you look out and go, does it seem different to you now, this divisiveness that's in the country?
Yeah, it does. It does, and it's sad
Yeah.
that everybody's falling for it. It's money,
Yeah.
and hysterical press.
Yeah, well, speaking of money, and it's I was thinking about that, and at the same time that there's this emphasis on money, there seems to be a devaluation of music. With Spotify, people kind of think that it's free these days. Do you see any kind of correlation between those things?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Cut the long story short, yeah.
That does indeed cut it short. Yes, yeah, so feel free to elaborate if you want.
Don't know. I mean, it's the whole thing now is apparently the attention spans have disappeared. This is what I'm told.
Yeah.
And so therefore you put your albums out in increments. So I mean, that's why you get people moaning about the extra bonuses and
Right.
five tracks are missing and all this kind of thing. Because my kind of people, they're not used to that. They're used to the album comes out and that's it. Now it's a protracted sort of, single then video then second single then second video. The whole idea being to keep you in the public eye as long as possible. That's the new way of doing it.
Yeah. And motivation-wise, I don't think anybody makes records anymore to get rich. They hope to break even at best, and then they have to tour, which is kind of the flip side to the way it used to be. Isn't that right?
Well, I guess merch is a big deal when you tour.
Yeah.
That is always great for me. But I don't know. One thing leads to another. Yeah, I think it's grossly unfair financially with Spotify and people like that. But hopefully, it'll work itself out. I won't stop what I'm doing because I don't really do it for the money. I never did. I did it for the fun.
Yes. God
Camaraderie.
bless you too. So what keeps you going? I mean, you're almost 85 years old. There's only a few of you guys out there that are doing it at this point. It's got to be something more than money, or even is it just the love, or is it because that's what you do?
COVID.
COVID. Okay. Well, God bless. Well, good on
Well,
COVID then.
that came, I mean, at 19, 19, I did a gig at the Beacon with Mott, and then we did 4 nights at the City Winery in New York. That was from the birthday.
Yeah.
And then I got tinnitus about 2 months later, and then COVID hit as well.
Yeah.
So I was kind of stuck in the house. And at the same time, this guy, Mike Kobayashi, had asked to manage me. And I also knew a guy called Russ Halfin, who's a pretty famous photographer. Well, I'm stuck in the house, and Andy York wasn't playing with Mellencamp. He was around.
Right.
And they started saying people would like to play with you. That's how it all started. And so instead of sitting there doing nothing, and then people coming in like, Sting and Billy Gibbons were the first two.
Yeah.
It encourages you to, it gives you that incentive, to do more and more and more. Because the Ramp Band didn't have home studios. All these guys did,
Yeah. Yeah. So did the people who played on the record inspire the songs, or was it the other way around?
I started it off, and then they started coming back, and what they were doing was great. That sort of inspired me to carry on. So instead of like maybe 10 tracks, I wrote about 23, I think. Yeah, I was surprised me because I'm not that prolific.
Right. Yeah. Well, you got to go with the flow when it happens.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love seeing that Lucinda Williams is on the new record. I've always been a big fan of hers. How did that come about?
She came to a gig I did in Nashville with her husband, and her husband likes what I do.
Yeah.
And came back after the show. She seemed to have enjoyed herself, so we asked her if she'd like to partake, and my wife sings everything in one note, so I couldn't do that particular song with her. We needed professional help.
Okay.
So
and it kind of remind me. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, please.
Well, I was going to say, like a lot of them, they give you a lot of tracks, so you can pick and choose, which is very nice.
Yeah,
use what you want. Don't use what you don't want, which is a real nice way of doing it. Nobody falls out.
Right. You don't do a lot of duets. I remember you did that Junk Man with Gina Raivon back in like '79.
Yeah. And Mick Ronson, yeah.
That was awesome.
That was Mick's idea.
Was it?
Well, yeah, she was going with somebody else. And then Mick was up there doing something foreign. He said, why don't you just try it with Ian? Because I was up, we were in the same, studio. And I went down and did it, and that was it.
Yeah.
She's got chops,
She's got a few pipes on her, that's for sure.
Great girl, too. Good fun.
And the other person that's still around and making music is Ellen Foley. I spoke to her a couple of years ago. She had a new record out. Do you keep in touch with these folks much?
I haven't talked to Ellen lately. I saw her in the Mall a couple of years back.
Right.
She looks the same. She's aged remarkably well.
Yep.
She was good fun to work with. Monster voice.
Yes. Yeah,
I had
to
sort of like contain her somewhat, but she did well. She in Europe, I think Belgium, Holland, all around there. She had number ones and all that kind of thing,
Yeah, good. It's good to see. I loved your little cameo appearance in James Maestro's video. You didn't do a video for yourself, but there you are playing weatherman in him.
Well, I have to work for my band, Yeah, whatever they tell me to do, I have to do it.
Fair enough. So is it, I think the state of rock and roll, you're obviously an expert. You've been doing it for 50, 60, 70 years now. It seems to me that rock and roll has kind of gone back to being underground music again. Would that be a fair statement? It had its time in the sun in the 60s and 70s, and it's kind of, but maybe that's where it belongs.
Well, it's kind of like jazz, isn't it? I mean, right now it's pop, it's country pop, and it's rap. It's all according to the years you grow up in, the situation you find yourself in, where you live. Are you rich, are you poor, that kind of thing. Everybody grows up to a different tune. I'm glad that we're up a corner with jazz, I suppose, that kind of thing,
Yep.
and that's the way it is. We are our 50 years, but it doesn't alter my desire to keep doing what I do, and it'll go where it goes,
Yep. And now, when you had this time off during COVID and you were writing all these songs, have you considered writing another book? I mean, your Diary of a Rockstar is considered a classic of its kind. And I see your contemporary, Mr. Dylan, has just come out with this thing, this modern song thing. Have you got a book in you somewhere?
No.
No?
I find that, a book is composed of a lot of lyrics.
Yeah. And lyrics make more money than songs, book. Huh?
Yeah, I just did that off the bat. I just got married, and there was a lot of time on my hands.
Right.
And we were touring, and that's why that got done, yeah.
Yeah. But it seems to have held up over the years. As I mean, it keeps coming back. Are you surprised about that?
I just re-signed it. Yeah, I just signed another 3 years on it.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed in Horse's Mouth, you mentioned that I think Little Richard was one of your three heroes. Now, I can guess maybe who the other two are, but I'd rather you tell me.
Oh, there's more than two.
Okay.
Jerry Lee, a whole lot of shake.
Yep.
Chuck Berry, the King. and then there was people like the Platters, you know, and, you know, they talk about punk. I mean, to me, Gene Vincent was the punk. No, a lot of great people back there. I saw Buddy Holly, DeMont.
Oh, really?
Lester.
Oh, man.
I saw Sam Cooke and Little Richard.
Jeez.
Captain Granada,
right?
Which is a little town outside Northampton.
That must have been. Yeah, that's mind blowing.
Well, in those days, they would Sounds Incorporated. They couldn't afford to bring their own bands, you know. So they Sounds Incorporated were back, and they did a great job.
Yep.
I remember this guy, Cliff White, was back in, was the guitar player with Sam Cooke, and he just kept on turning around to the band, thinking, down, down, go down. And Sam Cooke was loud. I always thought he was a sort of a soft singer, but he's not live. I mean, he brought the house in. And honestly, nobody knew who he was.
Yeah. And seeing all those guys, it must have done something to you. Did it make you realize that this is what you wanted to do, that you could do this as well?
No, I was just a raging fan. The rest of it's just the luck, you know, and if you, hanging in is both. So.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Hanging in, you know. You turn from a fan to, like, I was a bass player, and then I played with Billy Fury and Freddie Fingers of Lee. You know, semi-pro, and then slowly you start going to Germany, and that shows you what you can do 7 nights a week.
Right.
Slowly you're thinking, maybe I should do this for a living, because I was a factory guy, you know, I had 40 jobs.
Right.
I didn't like the 40 jobs. They were in between us. So therefore it seemed natural to, you know, to have a go, you know, and so I just kept on hanging in.
Right. Right.
Eventually, it only takes a phone call, you know, and your life will change.
Yeah. I think I was in England in 72 when they had the big London Rock and Roll Show. I don't know if you remember that. And it was also the time that Bowie was big and all the young dudes had come out. It's interesting to me that kind of 50s revival happened at the same time that all the other stuff did. Were you aware of that?
I was in a band that was doing, I mean, Freddie Fingers Lee was 50s, you know. Billy Fury, 50s. Yeah. But, you know, factories, you name it, anything under the sun. And then the jukeboxes every night, you know, in the pub.
Yeah. Yeah, jukeboxes are great.
I used to
have a jukebox in my house.
Yeah. But when I joined Mark, what happened was they had two writers. They had Pete Watts, the bass player, and then they had Mick Rouse. And the two of them were the writers. And then Pete, because he was a good-looking guy, just overloaded with models and said, you do it, not knowing that publishing is where the money is. You know, he regretted it later on, but he just said, I'm not going to bother, you do it. And so Mick and I started writing, and that's where that started, you know.
Yeah. Now I know you're a few years older than most of the other members of the band. Did that, and it seems to me, looking back, that you kind of dodged a lot of the problems of drugs and excess that a lot of the other rockers have gone through. Is that, do you can suggest that maybe it's because you were older and a little wiser?
I had a look, you know.
Yeah.
I went into, you know, Manhattan, the kitchens, you know. But to me, 2 hours up, 2 hours down, you know, that's not a deal. And also I have a brain that says, go on, try.
Yeah.
And I'll fuck you. I will fuck you. And I have that kind of a brain. So fortunately, I never got involved in that at all.
Right. I know Alejandro Escovedo toured with the Rant Band a couple of years ago, and he actually came up here to my studio and played "I Wish I Was Your Mother." What did you think when it must be, is it an honor to have somebody like that take your band out and do your songs for you?
He said to me, he came to my house once, how do you write? So I took him downstairs. I showed him how I wrote, and he just didn't understand a word of what I was talking about. So it was a bit of a waste of time, but he's great. I don't know. Sometimes he does a lot of covers from other people. He's a genuine, he loves it, you can sit through his set. I mean, I have done. I can't sit through sets, but I sat through with him.
And what did it feel like for you to have somebody, your band and somebody else out there playing and singing your songs in front of your fans?
Fine. Doesn't bother me. I mean, once they're written, they're written. I'm more into what I'm going to write next. I don't really care about what happened, because that happened. Good, bad, or indifferent. That's it.
Have you heard the new Stones album?
I heard a bit of it. That gospel song was great. Yeah, and I saw the video where they had all those billboards in LA. Great video, great video. I haven't listened. I'm in total. I don't even have a stereo, I don't think. I probably have some. I don't. I mean, all I do is write,
And are you writing now, or are there, because I think I saw somewhere where there you kind of alluded to a part three.
Well, I'm alluding, but I'm not alluding. My mind will stop immediately if I say there's a part three.
Okay, you don't want that.
I'm having a nice little one at the moment, but it could stop any time,
What else do you do with your time? Are you into baseball since you're living in the States now, or are you still following the football overseas, or so what?
No, it's just local stuff like anybody else. I was a baseball freak for about 10 years. Went
Really?
in. Yeah, went in, came out. Well, CBS had, Columbia had seats at Yankee Stadium. Yeah, right next to the box where Steinbrenner would be. And boy, Lou Piniella. I remember running out of the opposite dugout and screaming at Steinbrenner. Every swear word under the. Nobody could see it, but we could see it because we were next door to the glass box that Steinbrenner was in. Yeah.
Lupinella was
But
great.
no, I don't, we're up there. We go out now and again for a dinner, something like that. I do a bit of writing. And, we're our age. What can you do? You can't jump about like loonies.
That's true. Well, you can try, but you probably break something.
Yeah.
And you're on Sun Records now. That's got to be pretty cool for a Jerry Lee Lewis fan like yourself.
Well, not only Jerry Lee, I mean, Howlin' Wolf, there's tons of them on that label. I mean, it's obviously not the same as it was, but still, you see that yellow label, it gives you the chills.
It does
I've
indeed.
been down there a couple of times, been in the studio. It's magic.
Oh yeah. Is it?
It's eerie.
Yeah. So I've got this thing here, this
Yeah.
it's a Sun record, and you
Yeah.
just can't
See,
go
when
wrong
you
there. They still
get.
sound great too.
But that was a magic label to me. That's where it all started,
And were you a fan of Jerry Lee's country stuff that he did kind of in the late 60s, early 70s?
Yeah, Freddie Fingers Lee, the guy I played with bass with in England, was his absolute equivalent. And it was unfortunate in a way, because Fred just was naturally that way. And he had this the same thing with country music as Jerry Lee. But I got offered to meet him a couple of times, but I didn't really want to, because he had a bit of a rep, and I didn't want to ruin the vision I had of him. I remember he did the Ritz in New York, and his band got off stage and mingled in the audience in between the two sets. He didn't go backstage, and I thought maybe he's not in a great mood tonight,
Well, yeah, sometimes it can be a
It's great to
little
be on
bit
the
of
Sun
a
Records.
danger meeting your heroes.
Yeah.
But is there someone that really Did you meet anyone that really kind of connected with you and thought, man, this is can't get any better than this?
Probably Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did that go down?
Fine. Minimal, you know, like two or three times, but
Right.
fine. Yeah.
Yeah. What era of Bobness did you meet him first?
Well, first time I met him, I was down the other end, Paul Colby's place in the East Village, in the West Village. And what happened was, me and Ronson went in there one night, and the Colby's place was empty. But then Dylan walked in with Bobby Neurath and played the Hole of Desire. We're just sitting there like gobsmacked, you know. And that developed into the Rolling Thunder Review. That's how it started that particular night. So I met him that night, and I met him a couple of other times. I met him in an award thing, Columbia for him. It's always very nice, you know.
All right. Well, that's good to hear, because he's a very, to somebody who's never met him and is a fan, he's very enigmatic, and he'd be one of the
Yeah.
guys I'd be afraid to meet because of.
Well, yeah, it was actually my wife went up to him. He was on his own at the bar at this awards show, and she said, "Do you mind if my husband has a chat?" And
Thank
he said, "Fine, you know." So I went over and had a little chat. I have a monster picture
you.
in
Oh
my
God, that's
dining
great.
room. It's about 60 by 60, yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen that documentary of the making of We Are the World with Bob Dylan kind of lost in the middle of that?
You know, I don't really take much notice of anything these days in the musical world. I just do what I do.
Right, okay.
Bob, you know, obviously was tremendous influence. You know, you try and lyrically get anywhere near him, you know, and vocally early on, I used him because I didn't have a natural voice, you know, so I used him as a stepping stone to try and find my own voice, and got slagged off roundly. To the point where I had to stop. But yeah, meeting him would be a biggie, yeah.
I have a daughter who's in her 30s now, but I played, we were talking about I Wish I Were Your Mother. She still thought it was a Dylan song because I used to sing it around the house in a Dylan-y voice like you did. She's like, is that really Ian Hunter? But
Yeah.
I would take that as a
Well,
compliment.
I like phrase singing because, you know, if you're not a proper singer, you tend to phrase sing. I like Sonny Bono. Know, I Got You, Babe. Sonny Bono, too, I kind of got a bit off him because it was like we were non-singers, but somehow find a way to get it across.
Is that why you recorded Laugh at Me?
Yeah, I liked him, you know. A lot of people are like, well, what? You know, but I thought he was great. They had a number one. He worked for Phil Spector, you know, and that guy knew what he was doing musically.
He kind of came off as a joke, you know, as a foil
Yeah.
for especially on the TV show, but yeah, he
And
knew
to
what he
me,
was.
I really like what he's doing. His phrasing was similar to Dylan again, you know. I liked what he did.
Yeah. In those early Mott days, you guys did some interesting covers, you know, a Sonny Bono tune, a Melanie tune. Was there a lot of discussion amongst the band about where you would go and what you were doing?
Well, Lay Down was my idea.
Oh, great.
Most of them were or not.
Right.
Most of Guy Stevens's idea. I just love Lay Down. I the song.
Yeah.
You know, now and again you hear a song and it's, oh, we've got to do it. And
Yeah.
everybody's going, no, just because I want to do it. The Hereford Mafia. Well, I got him to do that one, yeah. But Guy early on would choose him, you know.
And
Be a
he's a
couple.
character that, of course, there's been a lot of print made about him and stories. Is the perception, the public perception, pretty right on at this point of Guy Stevens and the kind of guy he was and what he was to work
Not
with?
even close.
Not even close. In a brief couple of words, what we got wrong?
Well, for me, I mean, he was huge because
Yeah.
he believed in me, you know. But he had problems, you know. I mean, he really did. He was inside a couple of times, you know. He had problems, and from when he was a kid, you know. But mad as a March hare and music crazy, absolutely crazy. he started off as a DJ in the Scene Club in London, and you know, Jagger used to go in there, Burden, people like that. You know, they were picking up imports because Guy was important,
yeah,
long before anybody else. And then you know, Chris Blackwell got hold of him for Island Records, and he became an A&R guy with Island Records, and that's how we got on to Island.
Right. Yeah. And how did you get on to Columbia? Who signed you to CBS?
The Trees. And
sorry,
it was, well, you know, you're talking now of Bowie.
Right.
Just out of the blue, David's a fan. Offers us Suffragette City.
Yeah.
Don't want to do that. We're in a mess with Island Records. Offers us Dude, just like, shit, I can sing this, and this is a monster. You could just tell. He sat on the floor, and he played it, and it was like, that's just, they cannot deny us. They have to put that on the radio if we do that.
Yeah.
I just thought I could sing this too. And so what happened was Tony DeFries, who was David's manager, got us off Island and got us onto CBS. And then DeFries managed us for a while. And by then we were okay. We were in business. We had a few more hits in England.
Yeah.
We were doing okay.
Yeah. The line in All the Young Dudes at the end when you're kind of rapping and you go, hey, you with the glasses, was that written by Bowie or was that come up with by you?
No, that was my first rap. We'd been at the Rainbow a couple of nights before. And we're sitting there and Dave is like, oh, it's not the hit. One of the boys is the hit. And we're looking at him, he's out of his mind, you know. And he's just going round and round and round at the end. So in desperation, I just went in and just said what I'd said at the Rainbow, you know, a couple of nights earlier.
Yeah.
I guess it was the first rap. And then Rob McRouse put that tremendous intro, you know.
It is a beautiful thing, yes.
So, we did our bit on that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was at a Bad Company gig sometime in the 80s. I was interviewing Simon Kirk, and at the time, Mick Ralphs kind of walked up behind and was toying with the guitar and just started playing that riff, the intro to All the Young Dudes out of the blue, and I almost lost my mind.
And that was his. I mean, that was just Mick. He's, you know, another one like Ronson. Simple.
Yeah.
No show off about it. Understated, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think as a Mott fan, all of us are like, how did it not work with Ronson being in the band? But I guess it's a personality thing that just didn't gel with the rest of them. Is that right?
It was fine with me, you know.
Yeah.
Like I say, the Hereford Mafia really turned down again.
Yeah. And,
I was surprised. I really was, because to me, it was obvious.
Yep. On paper, it makes all the sense in the world.
And Mick and I got on great. And they say that we paired off. We didn't pair off at all, you know.
Uh-huh.
We didn't pair off. I mean, yes, he was on a separate deal.
Right.
We weren't paying him, you know, like it was a whole different thing. You know, when you came out of the gig, it was a pain in the ass in a way, because come out of the gig and there was a limo for us and then there would be a limo for him, you know, from DeFries. So he was kind of kept separate. And I understand why Pete and Buff didn't like that. But to me, musically, it was great.
Yeah.
And so why knock it? You know, just get on with it.
Right. So that stuff of the limos aside, when you were in the studio with Ronson and the band, what was that vibe like?
That was great. We only did one track with him. Saturday
got gigs, yeah.
And what had happened was they knew I was leaving. And so Buff apparently wrote this horrible song. I can't remember this, but the story goes, he wrote this horrible song and they got me in there and I panicked because it was a horrible song and wrote this Saturday gigs there and then.
Yeah.
Mick produced that and it sounds beautiful. It did make the top 30. I think it went about 34 or something like that.
Right.
And I just figured the game's over because that track was great and it should have been a hit and it wasn't.
Yeah, 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 it should have been. Oh, well. Now, do you have something coming out, a Jesse Mallon song that is being released soon?
Yeah, yeah. Jesse's done he got in a spot of trouble with his physique. And we've done something for Jess.
And when will that see the light of day, do you know?
I don't know. I haven't spoke to him in a while. It was done through James Mastro.
Right. Okay.
It was a member of my band, you know.
Yeah. 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 Jesse played here many years ago, but great, great artist. I love him. Hope he does. Hope he gets
he's
better.
He's out with Alejandro now, James
Oh,
Mastro.
good. Well, that's good to hear. That's what
he
you
opens
want.
For him. He's got his own album out. And he opens for Alejandro, and then he gets up and plays with Alejandro.
Yeah. Yeah. So for an old road dog like yourself, a guy who's been rocking and rolling and doing shows for all these years, was there some kind of stuff that you had to go through in your head when you realized that you couldn't gig like you used to because of the tinnitus and all that?
Well, you sort of dream of gigging because you're so used
Really?
to doing it, you know what I mean? Yeah. And you know, shit happens. What can I tell you? You know, it happens to everybody. I don't want to go out unless I can give a good show, you know.
Sure.
As simple as that. And I'm right in the middle of that at the moment. It's been one thing after the other, as it happens when you're in your 80s, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if I can get myself sorted, you know, it won't be a full band. It'll be Q&A, you know, and acoustic. Because I can't be bothered jumping about.
It's just great that folks in there, I mean, Mick Jagger is 80 and Keith just turned 80 and they're doing their thing. And it's just like, you know,
We won't
I
go. We will not
remember.
go quietly.
As
I
it
mean,
should. And they were talking about the Stones ending. They couldn't good. Could they do it past 30? And
yeah, well, I didn't start till I was 29. I
I
joined
know.
up, you know, 50 years later. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. Fantastic. Well, I thank you for everything, especially the new album. But I've been a huge fan ever since I think 72 when I first heard you. So
Right.
it's been a real pleasure, and I hope to see you again on the stage sometime. I'll travel the world.
Somewhere, something.
Don't see. I don't think you'll be making it down under anytime soon. But you know there is an Australian Down Under Ian Hunter Appreciation Society. Are you aware of it?
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful to them. You know,
They're very, forever hopeful.
a bit of a slap, as I tell him now and again.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you very much. And like I said, wish you nothing but the best. And
okay,
appreciate
Mark.
everything you've done for me. Thank all of us rockers. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Bye bye.